Emery Twigg is from the Kainai Nation of the Blackfoot Confederacy in southern Alberta. Troy graduated from the University of Lethbridge in 2003, and we just realized that I had the great honor of presenting him with his Bachelor of Fine Arts degree in Theatre and Dramatic Arts in October of 2003. He is currently a master's candidate in dance at York University.
Oki, nidaniku gyayo ketuki. My name is Troy Emery Twigg, and I am Blackfoot from the Kainai Reserve situated in southern Alberta. I'd like to share a story with you about myself and about what I went through in the educational system. Here I was, born, bred, and raised on the Blood Reserve, going to school. And before I knew it, I was given a diploma and pushed through grade 12. And not understanding how the real world worked beyond the reserve, I went out there to try and tackle the reserve and get a job, but my skills were very poor. I had graduated grade 12 and only able to read at a grade 8 level. And because of the Alberta school system, I wasn't qualified to receive my diploma, so I faced another challenge. I went to the Lethbridge Community College to upgrade my skills. And when I got there, I was sitting in a classroom all by myself and so nervous that I was in a different school system. I didn't have any other Aboriginal people around me or that support system. But when the classroom started filling out, I noticed that I was the only Aboriginal person there. And I was feeling very nervous already that I could not concentrate on what the material was. I couldn't place myself in Western history, and so therefore I couldn't comprehend the material. And when I was asked a question from the professor, I wasn't able to answer it, and I remember the question. He looked at me and he said, "Troy, what's a monopoly?" And I sat there and I couldn't fake it. So I said, "I don't know the answer to the question." And he snickered and walked on by as other people laughed in their seat and kept their head forward, again feeling like the dumb Indian. I went to my elder, Raymond Many Bears, and he had told me, "When you go out there, this is what our story is. We were trained to be dumb people." I also want to share another story with you. I was walking to work one day after I had just completed doing my Bachelor of Fine Arts at the University of Lethbridge in theater. I took a year off and started working at the Lethbridge Shelter and Resource Center. And it is 90% Native American and who use the shelter and are mostly alcoholics. One summer morning I was walking to work, and I sat there across the park where they all drink and pass around alcohol and congregate. And there was this group of Native men standing in a circle, passing around a blue bottle of Finesse hairspray, no doubtedly trying to escape the reality and not wanting to become sober in the grown-to-be hot summer sun. And the policemen pulled up, and I was watching this kerfuffle going on. And there was a couple of them, and they were throwing people into the paddy wagon. And some just dropped their association, turned away, and walked away because they didn't want to be a part of that. They didn't want to go to jail. But there was a group of young Aboriginal men who walked away. And one started singing a Blackfoot song. And I found this really interesting as I sat down on the bench in the park and was watching this. And the two policemen just snickered at what these people were doing. And then he was joined by another man. And as they started walking, they were almost in this formation of a flock of seagulls, almost. And as they were walking away, the song became this disintegrating chant
behind the buildings. And it was very magical because I sat there, and this is where I received the most education about myself and empowered me, when I sat there and things started to come to life through this man's music. And sitting there and looking at him, damaged, and his friends, and the other people pulled into the paddy wagon, I began to wonder, there's so much power in that song, there's so much pride that I felt in here and in here, and I began to feel robbed of my own culture in this system. So I started asking myself a question, why did that happen? Why did I get to that point? When referring to song and dance, I use the terms tools as a means of survival. Unlike the tools provided by the buffalo or that of Mother Earth's flowing water, natural resources, food, fire, and the warmth of the sun, Natdusi, the tools of song and dance provide and preserve what is in the heart, mind, body, and soul of many cultures that ultimately distinguishes identity. It is in this paper that I will demonstrate the effects of how song, dance, and ritual demonstrate identity and how that is crucial to survival among the Blackfoot Nation. I will also discuss efforts that were used to suppress, diminish, and abolish these traditions and how the outcomes of such actions resulted throughout historical implications imposed upon the Blackfoot Nation. These are tools of teaching and tools to give back to all those who provided it to us to begin with. For many, this was all-inclusive as a way of life. I would like to begin by discussing where do these songs come from and how they are used in Blackfoot culture. To give you an example of its many usages, Elder Margaret Heinemann, also known to us as Odan, explains childbirth and its traditional components. Many people today have no traditional knowledge of how our people were born in the past, or such details as the traditional raising of children, how they were taught and disciplined. I learned about childbirth by helping when my older sister had her baby at home. The widow of an old man named White Calf was living near us, and she knew about childbirth as an Indian midwife. She took care of my sister with herbal brews. She would use her own special plants, preparing them while singing her power song and praying, after which she made her drink mixture. Songs were used as celebration and in ceremonies. A lot of the songs are used as prayers as well as are very sacred and respected. Songs come to us from the spirit world, and that is how they are transferred to us. Olivia Tailfeather still uses this method when creating her contemporary work with the rattle and drum. An example was when she went to the river bottom and gave prayers to the spirits as the melody came to her from the beavers. What was exciting for her was watching the beavers play as she sang out to them and spoke to them in Blackfoot, and they gave her the beaver song. It is a roundette song and carries undertones of a blues melody when sung in English. Elder Andy Blackwater from the Blood Tribe states, "All songs and ceremonies come from the other side, from the spirit world, animal world. All our being is connected spiritually and physically to our homelands." To speak more in depth about the origins of songs, one of anthropologist Clark Whistler's informants of the Blackfoot Reserve, Duval, explains, "All Blackfoot songs, except those learned from other tribes, are said to have been obtained through dreams or visions. There seems to be no idea that one could deliberately compose a song. A man may be walking along and hear a bird, insect, stone, or something else singing. He remembers the song and claims it as especially given to him. A man may get songs from a ghost in the same way. There are many songs learned from other tribes as they come in with medicine bundles. In olden times, when a teepee was transferred, all the owners of painted teepees would gather and help the purchasers out with new songs. Anyone may dream of songs as those of the Medicine Pipe, the Kid Fox Society, and the Horse Medicine. Those are very powerful, and it is dangerous to sing them as a joke. The doctors have their own songs, and often hear one of them accusing others of using songs in doctoring. A doctor must get his own songs and power and cannot transfer them to one another. Yet, when a great doctor dies, one may be given songs by his ghost in dreams or vision. Dancing was given as a tool for celebration, giving thanks to the Creator and His many blessings. Movements are generally up and down motions while dancing in sacred ceremonies. In many songs and other parts of the rituals where the initial receiving of power is symbolized, the leader and his assistants often make a gesture as a receiving sign. In some cases, the arms are folded on the breast as if embracing an object, and an exclamation of satisfaction is uttered. Again, a movement from the heart may be made with one hand only. In some songs and parts of ceremonies, as when the sun pole at the sun dances up, the singers make motions with their arms to symbolize the flapping of wings of the eagle or other mythical birds. Some elders say that this is resembling the receiving sign or symbolizing a bird of prey or on the hunt. In most of the signing, it is custom for the leader to make gestures or signs expressing some of the ideas in the songs. Some dancing. After the bundle is opened, the ritual offers a number of dance songs or songs without words. In unison, one or more dance with the objects and are mostly free to dance as they are. There is no structure to the ceremonial dance, and there is, however, formations, and everything in ceremonial thought is represented in four, as in the four directions. There are many social dancing, as the Ogogasan, Blackfoot traditional ceremony, was always time for dancing in between ceremonies. The owl dance, round dance, and snake dance got everyone into the circle. These were more celebration. An elder from my reserve speaks of these ceremonies as, respect is a major theme in those practices, especially respect for the Creator and for all things of the creation. There is a deep respect for nature and for the universe, respect for other people too, especially children and elders. In their hearts, those of my grandmother's generation had so much respect for their elders that they never doubted the prayers and ceremonies practiced by them, even during the years when their minds were being confused by schools and churches. The residential schools played a very significant part in trying to convert the Blackfoot people to more of Christian religion, and in this process, a lot of damage was done to the people. Much confusion went on, and the effects of this is still felt throughout the generations. Indian agents emerged when we moved to our reserves. These men were appointed by the Canadian government and given complete authority over the lives of our people. Indian agents could limit or refuse to give out rations. In Canada, Indian agents issued passes that permitted people to leave the reserve for 3 days. Any person caught off the reserve without a valid pass was sent to jail for 30 days. Indian agents implemented government policy regardless of whether or not it benefited our people. Agent Wilson, who was working on the Blood Tribe, did everything in his power to exclude the activity of sun dancing, which was the main faith of the Blackfoot, our belief system, and the way we pray. It was called the Ogon. Agent Wilson was known as the man who stopped the dancing. This statement was actually recorded down in the Blood Tribe winter counts. On one such occasion, he withheld rations and the use of beef tongues. The beef tongues were used in ceremonies and the beef tongues were used in ceremonies and needed to perform them at the sun dance. Because of his efforts, no sun dances were held for 3 years. He prevented the Bloods from gathering into a single camp in 1896 and reported that, "I think this pagan ceremony has died out for good." The Bloods tried to have a sun dance the following year. However, Wilson was successful again. He also organized July 1st as sports days on the assumption that this would be a wholesome alternative to the festival. Heartened by his success, Agent Wilson decided in 1898 to extend his ban to include all types of giveaway dances. His first action was to arrest Running Wolf, Big Rib, and White Man's Wife for putting on a medicine pipe dance. But he refused to press charges when the matter came before the magistrate. I thoroughly recognize that this medicine pipe dance is part of their religion and do not wish to insist at once that all the ceremony must cease, but I do think it right in view of the fact that so many children are being returned from industrial and boarding schools where they have been given religious instruction to begin to press the Indians a little upon the subject. In 1895, the Indian Act was revised to prohibit any festival, dance, or other ceremony in which the giving away or paying or giving back of money, goods, or articles of any sort forms a part. In many ceremonial dances or dancing with bundles, medicine bundles, or the transferring of bundles, many gifts are given due to their power and because of the belief system. And this often helped the person with prayers and the vows being made. Wilson's tenacity to prevent these dances and implement policy was challenged when Running Wolf, a minor chief and one of the leading supporters of Native religion, claimed that as a holy man, he had to go away by himself to make an offering to the sun. But he needed 6 whole beef tongues. Wilson was shocked a few days later when he learned that they were to be used so that either child's wife could sponsor a sun dance. The effects of residential school left drastic impressions of mistrust, even within our own people. An elder from residential school explains her experience with traditional knowledge after coming through the residential school system. We, who were young, know little about the protocol that needs to be followed in approaching such elders for knowledge and advice. There are many rules and etiquettes that must be treated respectfully and never fooled around with. I suppose the old people wanted to make sure we were sincere in our interests. Audrey Weasel Traveler writes in part of her thesis titled, A Shining Trail to the Sun Lodge, Renewal Through Blackfoot Ways of Knowing. My identity as a First Nations person was seldom mentioned in a positive light within the classroom, while the majority of the textbook references to my people were atrocious. Blackboard borders describe A is for apple, B is for ball, and I is for Indian. And somehow I was left to leave somewhat small and itemized by such an illusion. A curriculum that gave no validation to the rich and beautiful heritage of First Nations people, but rather fostered the concept of negative stereotyping, did little to prevent the seeds of cultural alienation from embedding within many of the First Nations students. Many of these experiences are shared throughout the First Nations people across Canada, and the Blood Reserve was no exception. In my interviews with people from the reserve, it could be compiled generally that abuse, neglect, and rape were the dominating factors that prolong and stage an ongoing effect that only advanced into the younger generations. The concept of degradation can be echoed throughout the education system and life on the street in nearby town, villages, and cities. The concept still exists in the lives of many people struggling with identity while trying to further themselves into the system of modern society. These experiences left drastic effects on our parents and grandparents who came out of residential school with lost values, hope, and no direction. After being slapped in the face and encouraged that our people are nothing but uncivilized savages, respect was gone for one another, themselves, and the belief system. One can only imagine why so many of these men and women hang out downtown Lethbridge consuming alcohol on an everyday basis or anything to drown your shameful and worthless life. That was beaten into you by the people running the schools. Another section of Weasel Traveler's research in Insights and Assessments, writing on her experience as a counselor, she interviews an inmate at the Lethbridge Correctional Center, focusing on his patterns of returning to jail. He asked her if she had ever attended residential school. She responded yes, and he said that he had spent 8 years in the boarding school, and this place is easy. It's freedom compared to those 8 years in residential school. As I was compiling information for my research, a tribal spiritual leader shared his information and experience of residential school. He recalls his memory of being in residential school one fall night, getting ready for bed as Spear Chief arrives on horseback, enters the schools, walks down the hall, and hands his son treats of bars and oranges he had in his pocket, and goes back out. After he left, that boy didn't get one bite out of that candy. Candy was always taken away. We were not worthy of such prestige, and we were very degraded in the system. He recalls the many chores he had to do to accomplish throughout the day. by growing their own food and making food from the farm. Children made butter, however, never allowed to use the butter, only the staff. It was difficult to be sitting next to the staff dining room and looking over at their food, which by his expression was better than what they were eating. These deliberate acts of injustices were very detrimental among the Blackfoot peoples who encountered and lived through such harsh times. There was hope in finding ourselves through all of this abuse, as Odun explains. We loved and cherished our grandparents, so we knew they couldn't be as evil as we were being told in school. So through it all, I believe and learned from a damaged man singing a Blackfoot song, probably given to him for strength, I don't know. But who am I and what was I? For me, this was a very empowering scenario. And learning the use of these tools of song and dance is the greatest education that will ever empower me as I learn to survive in this system. And in closing, and in part of the Q&A, I would like to ask the questions and ask out there, why did this happen? Who's in charge? What administration was in charge at the time? How is it still affecting our people? Why was I affected? And why was I involved in this? Anyone want to give a stab at it?